welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Jason Irwin. Jason Irwin's new book is called A Blister of Stars, and it was just published in 2016 by Low Ghost Press. He is the author of Watering the Dead from Pavement Saw Press, winner of the Transcontinental Poetry Award, and the chapbooks Where Are You? From Night Ballet Press, and Some Days It's a Love Story from Slipstream Press. His work has been published in Sycamore Review, Confrontation, and Poetry Island Review, among others. He grew up in Dunkirk, New York. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay. Well, really, congratulations on this new book. It's really exciting.
Thank you.
Okay. And so you're going to read from the new book, right?
Yes.
Okay. So go ahead.
Okay. Read a poem called Tethered. It's in two parts. One. December, a few weeks before Christmas, and I'm in the hospital again. Another round of doctors, nurses, and interns with ballpoint pens and endless questions. X-rays and scans, stiff sheets and little plastic cups of ginger ale. Another week out of school, another surgery. But this time is different. My club foot will be amputated. The doctors assure me I will be better off in the long run. Yet I am sick and tired of hospitals, of surgery, of checking my blood pressure and temperature, the beeping of IV machines. Outside, snowflakes fall like a million Eucharists, and on the far wall, Jesus hangs on his cross like a kite. I lie awake, tracing the scars that crisscross my body as shadows flood the room. I imagine my blood draining, spilling out in majestic rivulets of crimson. Two. In the morning, they lay me on a table and wheel me to a room cold as chrome, where giant parrots dressed as doctors perch, their green wings shining like knife blades in the halogen radiance. I die that day, vancomycin, cardiac arrest, but wake as if only seconds have passed, my club foot still attached. Everyone is gathered around as if in vigil, eager for news about that place their faith assures them I have traveled to. But there was no light at the end of the tunnel, no seraphim or long-dead relatives to deliver me to the bosom of Abraham. I was not Christ risen in glory. I was just one sick child among many sick children, tethered to this world. This is called The Women in the Courtyard. Sunday afternoon, the sun carves shadows into the concrete and blacktop. The women are in the courtyard, celebrating the Sabbath. The women are in the courtyard, laughing and singing. They wear flowered house dresses and slippers, like their grandmothers did. Sunday afternoon, the women in the courtyard form an assembly line between the barrels marked trash and recycle. They separate tin from glass, paper from plastic, mine through the week's refuse, leftover dinners, moldy cheese, diapers, coffee grounds. The women are in the courtyard, laughing, telling tales of ex-lovers and home, Nicaragua, Mexico, the Dominican Republic, places they will never see again. It is a Sabbath. God relaxes while the women in the courtyard do the work the other tenants will not. Sunday afternoon, the sun carves shadows into the concrete and blacktop. The women are in the courtyard, celebrating the Sabbath, saying prayers for their grandmothers, remembering better days, when America was a toothpaste commercial, as bright and unblemished as the sun. This is called Black and Tanned. Black and tanned, we hurly-burlied through the ship swaying of streets and doorways and maze of cityscapes, amid the sweat of clinking glass laughs, propelled by a taste for the tragic. In a bitter swill of blurred antidotes and redundancies, we have talked of heroes, villains, and the sacredness of socks.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Jason Irwin, reading from his new book, A Blister of Stars. Jason, I've been familiar with your poems for a while, and
yep.
And been a fan of your work, and I've always liked your poems about the working class body, and it seems like now you're moving more into the physical body as related to illness, the physical body as a sick child. Am I correct on that? Or?
Yes, very much.
Okay. Can you talk about that movement?
Well, after writing a lot of working class poems, I actually kind of get bored with it. Not that it's a bad thing, but I wanted to do something different. And I have a lot of birth defects that has affected me for many years. And it wasn't until actually Facebook a few years ago where I found a lot of people who had same kind of problems. And I just started to write about them where I would not before. Tried to hide it.
Okay. Well, once you started to write these poems, what challenges did you run into in terms of the writing or the hiding,
I think of it as kind of like coming out of the closet in a way. And some of the poems I would not want to read in front of friends that I know here, but I have friends and family back home who I've lived with my whole life who know it, but in a lot of ways it's embarrassing. But I felt like I had to do it.
Mm-hmm. And in the writing, did some of that, did you find some release in that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't feel as weird anymore.
Okay. Do you have some more poems of the physical body that you could read?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's called Hospital Room. Who am I this night, soaked with fever? Whose eyes watch this shadow play of animals, the skulls of little children dancing in the haloed light? Dark birds circle overhead. Their breath is fire and rot. They will divide my bones like coins. All my life whittled down to this moment. The gurney's squeaky wheel, my veined hands, the familiar scent, the familiar fear. It's called Cheese Sandwiches. I nibble the cheese sandwich like a chipmunk, chewing and chewing until it loses all flavor and I grow tired of chewing and chewing, wanting only to be outside with my classmates who have left me with Tony, the school janitor, who sings Sinatra as he mops the floor. The aromas of tacos, hot dogs, and pepperoni pizza buns hang in thick clouds like the cigarette smoke on bingo night. It doesn't matter if my esophagus keeps constricting. It doesn't matter if a chunk of food lodges in my throat. If I start choking or vomit, I don't care about the look of fear in my mother's eyes or the shame and frustration in my father's. Maybe I'll have to go back to the hospital and Dr. Jewett will stick a long tube down my throat. Maybe I'll have to eat baby food again. I don't care. All I want is to run outside, to bite down on a slice of pizza or a hot dog smothered in mustard. All I want is to feel satiated, to feel like I belong.
I mean, I feel like the bravery of the poems really comes across, and I feel like the hallmark details that you have in your work keep coming through also. But in these poems, I feel like it feels like the bottom of them drops out somehow, and there's just a lot more emotion coming, you know.
That's good, I hope.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I think that's really good. And I can't help, I probably said this to you last time you were on the show, which was a number of years ago. You know, you have this interaction, maybe that's not the right word, between your speaking voice, which is such a great voice, and the voice in your poems, which is such a great voice, and together, it's really good to listen to you read.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really is. Okay. Well, can you read some more?
Yes. This is called Jazz, a prose poem. At the end of the bar, I nurse a $5 Budweiser. Watch a hooker who looks like Diana Ross, hands on hips, admire her reflection in the mirror. When a man with deviance on his breath, drunk wobbling like a bowling pin, hovers over me. Who do you think you are? He demands. A Zapata revolutionary? A spy? A no-goodnik? Choking, I tell him that I'm only here for a few beers, to listen to the band, and that I'm not, in fact, a revolutionary, Zapata or otherwise, though I do admire Emiliano's courage, his mustaches. Taken aback, he stumbles, then climbs atop the chair beside me and orders beers for both of us, his eyes sparkling like a pair of bruised diamonds. Mussing my hair as if I were his long-lost kid brother, he ruminates on the pain in his gut, his dislike of Oprah. The room starts to spin as the musicians take the stage, a trumpet, a piano, a hint of Boo Boo's birthday, and for a brief moment, we look as if we belong here, side by side, like two bottles of top shelf, just waiting to be emptied. It's called Smoke Rising. To see it, as my grandfather saw it, when he was a man of my age, meant hope, food on the table, a shield against those horrors no one would speak of, afflictions passed down, locked away in attics and basements, money owed, alcoholism, infidelity, insanity, or a crippled child. Back then, to see dark clouds of smoke rising above the housetops meant that God, in his wisdom and mercy, was still on our side. To see smoke rising meant the factories, those benevolent monstrosities that dictate time and identity, were open, that iron ore was being transformed into steel, and so our dreams, far flung as our faith, had not yet turned to rust. This is another prose poem called Burning. Fireworks exploded in red, white, and blue flowers high above the Third Street overpass as we puked our way up Leopard Street, drunk on golden anniversary and onion rings, past the convenience store where we smashed bottles across the parking lot and drove our bikes in front of cars, where years later we'd stand in front of what was left of Dave Madaban's house after a Christmas Eve fire took his youngest boy. A lone tricycle stood on the sidewalk, the smell of burning, our breath visible in the cold silence.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty. My guest today is the poet Jason Irwin, reading from his new book, A Blister of Stars. It was published by Logos Press. I'm thinking about the recurrence of themes in your book. I mean, we talked about working class stuff, but more particularly, what I keep hearing is God keeps coming in there.
Yeah.
And drinking and the body. And I'm wondering if you think that as a writer, you know, we all have these obsessions, these two or three things we write about, and if you agree with that and if you think those are yours.
Yeah, I'm trying to not write so much about drinking because I don't think I do it as much as I used to, but certainly.
Do you mean drink or write about drinking?
Write about drinking.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But certainly the God growing up Catholic, I think it's had a big influence in both good and bad ways.
Mm-hmm.
And more so now writing about the body as far as illness than I have before.
So would you say those are your three obsessions or are the things I'm
yeah,
not...
Yeah, they are, yeah.
Yeah. But you had said previously that you're getting kind of tired of your working class poems, even though I think your working class poems are really, really good. So what are you going to do? Are you tired of your obsessions or as a writer?
I just want to write things that are not just focused on either what people call working class or Rust Belt poems.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that out there, and I don't know, I just think you can write about the same emotions that can relate to everyone, not just that.
Mm-hmm.
I still come back to it, of course.
Yeah, I feel like it's still in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we have time for more poems.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's called Where Deer Walk. Deliver us from the madness of civilization, the melancholy of city buses and office buildings, the loneliness of crowds. Trust us to those wide open spaces far from ambition and necessity, to a cabin in the forest where summer's slow delirium kindles our daydreams. Let's lounge by the water's stillness, watching wheels of sunlight careen through the magnolia trees as a mourning dove croons to a blue jay's mocking counterpoint. Follow me out into the ink-black night under heaven's immeasurable constellations that ignite like a billion chandeliers, while a choir of frogs lulls us to sleep. Forget the world with all its troubles, bills to pay, and front page headlines. Return us to that fleeting perfection of our dreams. Let's make love in the tall grass where a family of deer walks, the doe, the fawn, innocent of everything, yet fully aware. It's called Moonlight and Chocolate Cake. What would our grandparents have thought, the two of us waking at 3 a.m. to finish off the chocolate cake? You in your blue robe, your hair a tangle of hazelnut, me in my boxers, my chin bristling gray. We tiptoe through the apartment as if we were children. God bless this kitchen, this salt and pepper shaker, this countertop with moonlight spilling like milk. Called The Girl at the Bus Stop. Is it the uncertainty of weather, rush hour traffic, or the evening news that reminds us how little time we have? As children, we were taught simple lessons, to say please and thank you, to look both ways before crossing the street, that the human heart is never satisfied. Aren't we like that girl at the bus stop? Plaid skirt, one wool sock pulled tight at her knee, the other lost around her ankle, bewildered by the distance we must travel. One wrong turn can lead us places we may never return from. Yet we keep wandering, following that faraway horizon, paying our toll along the way, ever hopeful that somewhere beyond the longitudes of grief and regret, we will find that innocence again. It's called Writing to Remember, another prose poem. This morning, while driving, sunlight hit my hands. My veins pulsed in the glow. It reminded me of our conversation last night about the man in Arizona who learned to capture moonlight and heal the body. You said there wasn't much going on, nothing on TV but commercials. I was engulfed in Camus, the scene where the boy is convulsing with plague filled me with envy. On the news, they talked about the mysterious death of a supermodel, the economy, the war, how bodies were thrown into wells and children with missing limbs had flies covering their faces. I'm drinking coffee now. It's 3 p.m, overcast. I'm still without work, writing this letter to remember. I forget so many things.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Jason Irwin, reading poems from his new book, A Blister of Stars. A couple of times during this interview, you've talked about, you've mentioned prose poems. And I wonder if you could talk about them a little bit, thinking about some of our listeners who may be new writers.
Okay.
And, you know, what that means to you and having some prose poems, some not prose poems in a book, and whether you write fiction also or nonfiction. Okay. So,
I used to write fiction, but as far as prose poems, I think some poems may start out as a prose poem or not a prose poem, and it just depends on how it feels. I don't know. Sometimes if it has a more surreal aspect, it works better with the prose poem. Basically, a poem without line breaks, just a paragraph or a stanza.
Mm-hmm.
Writing to Remember, that poem was the first poem that I wrote when I moved to Pittsburgh about the news. It's also another obsession of mine that I don't write as much poems about, but I'm a news junkie.
As you said, that was one of the first poems, the first poem you wrote when you came to Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
which was a while ago, right?
Yeah, it's been 10 years.
But it's just coming out in this book now?
Yes.
So why didn't it appear in previous books?
I don't know.
who can we ask? Jason.
It didn't fit the last book, I guess.
Yeah, okay. But for those of our listeners who don't know what a prose poem is, you're defining it as a poem without line breaks.
Yeah. I don't think it's really prose in a way. I mean, it's maybe more image-based and a little less narrative, but sometimes they work that way, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, also thinking of, you know, because we have a range of listeners out there, also thinking of new writers. You have a number of books, which is great, chapbooks and books. Can you talk about whatever you want to mention about that process of getting those books, of working towards those books, maybe some words of encouragement for writers, younger writers?
Yeah. I think this book in particular took a long time and many revisions and taking poems out, and it's very frustrating. And if you believe, as much as you doubt yourself, as much as you believe in it, you should keep doing it. And you just got to keep submitting to places, and someone will say, yeah, I like that. The other ones seemed easier, and people have told me I'm just spoiled and don't like to work. So I've been trying to work harder at it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I always tell people, it sounds kind of goofy, but I always tell people that the only secret to writing is just don't quit.
Yeah.
You know, just no matter what happens, just keep writing. Because we all have those voices in our head mm-hmm. about, you know, those self-defeating voices.
Yeah.
And
they're
if you
a good
just,
thing, I think.
The self-defeating voice?
Yeah, because if you don't have them, then you think everything you write is great.
Oh, yeah, but...
I think they're good for me.
Okay, I could do with without mine. I'm just thinking of a lot of women writers I know who have an overload of them. But so we do have just a couple minutes here. So if you could read another poem.
Sure. Lorca at 5 a.m. In the kitchen, so the light won't wake you, I've got a half gallon of Greek wine and a hankering for something stronger. Lorca's absent soul, its spine bent, its pages dog-eared, open on the table. Outside, city lights burn like votive candles. I hear the faint rumble of thunder or the subway. The marble floor shines beneath me. In its maze, I see a gypsy girl dancing atop a volcano, a headless dog chasing a knight on horseback, Raskolnikov's bloody axe, and myself, a soul lost in the rabble of being and not. It's called The Apartment on Evenings. It's the first line of the poem. The apartment on evenings when you work late feels like an abandoned house where people long ago once lived. I wander from room to room like a restless intruder, running my fingers over the books and tabletops, playing your favorite records, saying hello to the refrigerator, the wooden floors, and the comfy gray chair in the corner, where I picture you reading, your face aglow in the soft lamplight.
The poetry of Jason Irwin. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.